This is football. I'm Kevin Clark. Deontay Lee joins in a second. Hidden gems, sleepers in this upcoming draft, which I think is, it's really important after the combine to start putting these guys into focus, because you're going to see a lot of guys who test well but don't play well, vice versa. And we start to really understand the draft order real quick as you get. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. A couple of hours ago, there was a report that Russell Wilson has some interest in Pittsburgh. I've been disheartened, I don't know how you want to phrase that, by the words the Steelers have used about their quarterback situation next year. If the best case scenario is that the GM is lying, that's bad. And he said essentially that he wants to roll in. They have all the faith in the world in Kenny Pickett. Then next year it's going to be Mason and Kenny Pickett. And that's going to be the competition. The hope there is that they have a different plan and they're just obscuring the truth here. And Russell Wilson is not going to be an MVP candidate ever again. But he's better than those two guys. And for Russell's market, the Steelers might be the best option. So I'm starting to see the vision here a little bit. Do you want to, and you're going to have to make offensive changes if you have Russell Wilson, because he's not as athletic as he once was, but he had a okay season last year. Like, he did not, the Nate Hackett year was a complete disaster. Last year, he showed some things. He was benched, not because of performance, although he is not worthy of that contract, but because they needed to make sure that that he didn't get injured for the injury guarantees, because they were planning on doing with it last week. So I don't think this is a disaster in any way. My official ruling, I know it's a little milquetoast, is I don't hate this. I don't hate this marriage. I'm not going to dunk on it. I'm not going to dunk on Russell Wilson trying to get his career back on track. I'm not going to dunk on the Steelers trying to improve their quarterback situation, because Pickett and Rudolph rolling into Latrobe in August is not it. Ladies and gentlemen, Deontay Lee. All right, one of our favorite regular season guests is back. It's Deontay Lee from The Athletic. He is fresh off the combine. What's going on, brother?
I'm doing well, man. You know, kind of recovering from a lot of steak and other things happening in Indianapolis. I think it takes me about a week to recover after being out till 3 a.m, you know, and all the places where everybody goes in Indy. But I'm feeling good, man. How are you?
I will repeat what I've said on this show a couple of times. Every young journalist will come up to me and say, how do you work the combine? And I'll tell them certain things about journalism. But my number one thing is nurse a light beer for the entire night. Don't be the guy getting the IPAs at 4:30 and then again at 4:45. Yeah. It's going to be bad for everybody.
Yeah, I think I tweeted
it's a marathon,
it,
not a sprint.
I've been in that position of getting to Wednesday, you know, and you're in prime or you're at high velocity and you're just looking around. And it's like, I don't live like this in any other time in my life.
No.
What was I thinking? What did I have to prove?
It really is. It gets bleak really quickly if you play it incorrectly. Combine impressions? We're going to do sleepers here, mid-round kind of gems. I'm excited about that. But anybody that's not on your list, that good, bad, indifferent, that popped for you that you changed your mind on?
Changed my mind on. I don't know if I would say changed my mind on. Like, two of the guys that I was kind of intrigued to see how they would test would be the pair of LSU defensive tackles, Mason mm-hmm. Smith and Mekhi Wingo, right? Like, and those names probably yep. aren't as sexy as like the Texas pair of Sevondre Sweat and Byron Murphy.
Yeah.
They got a lot of national yep. exposure that goes to the playoff, beat Alabama, the whole deal. But those are two defensive tackles, you know, in the NFL, we're always talking about playing with light boxes, you know, being able to handle explosive passes. And to do that, you've got to yep. have guys up front that can play a gap and a half, that can be disruptive, you know, and get penetration when you need them to. And I think that both those guys kind of fit the billing. You know, I think they both tested really well. They're going to be around 300 pounds. So there's going to be some versatility for those guys. I was really happy with how they tested. Those are the two guys I think that immediately stood out for me. And then there's guys like, you know, Blake Fisher from Notre Dame, being able to be there and see his measurables. And then you look and go back to the tape and it's like, he might not be as good as Joe Alt, you know, Blake Fisher at Notre Dame, but he's got clean tape, you know, he's got a lot that you can work with. So I think there's a lot of trench guys that maybe haven't been getting as much publicity because it's so top heavy at those positions that I was really kind of mm-hmm. happy walking away from the combine with.
I've become so trench-pilled in the draft, where I really just take linemen the first 2 days at the draft at this point and just figure the rest out later. But that's it.
I mean,
linebackers. I'm a linebacker guy.
Well, I think what we're seeing is like I think these draft classes, we're seeing more and more drop off now. Like there are significant cliffs. You know, I think that this draft is going to be a really big one where if you're drafting in the top 60, top 75, and you have a need up front, you better do it then, because you're probably not going to find a round four, a round five guy that's going to be able to be an immediate impact, right? Like you think about the Rams last year, being able to go later in the draft and get all the defensive front guys that ended up contributing for them. That's going to be a little bit more of an outlier thing, I think, as we go forward, because we're getting so much better at scouting those front bodies. Mm-hmm. And I think the guys that are not necessarily ready to go contribute immediately, you're really seeing that separation between the two of them.
My feeling on the trenches is I think we went through a period at the beginning of the passing boom. So let's say 2011, right, and then the first few years of that decade, where we didn't know, I know this sounds strange, we didn't know where football was going because it was becoming such a vertical game.
Right.
It was becoming such an outside game that I think there was more emphasis on accentuating the passing game than there was on the trenches for a few years.
Right.
And then the Eagles win the Super Bowl via the lines. Mm-hmm. The Niners do what they do because of the lines. The Rams do what they do because of the lines. And then there was this regression where we're just like, oh, it turns out football is the exact same it was 30 years ago. Right. Turns out it's the exact same sport. We just play it a little differently because the rules are different. The quarterbacks are better. And there's like all sorts of weird 7-on-7 stuff. But like the sport has changed in a million different ways. But one of them that didn't change was that you just need the best offensive and defensive line to win,
right,
and then everything else beyond that is a tiebreaker. Yeah,
George Young's planet theory still holds true, you know.
However, that's exactly right.
Half century later, man, like you got to get the
explain it. So yeah,
if I remember the quote verbatim, right, it's that there's a rare, well, to kind of paraphrase it, is that there's this rare class of guys who are that big, that fast, that athletic, that strong, and those are the guys that win football games for you. Right. And I think that we're seeing more and more of that. I think that what you're saying translates down to the college level as well. Right. You get the air raid boom in the aughts, you know, and everybody's chasing the quarterbacks and 3-4 wide receivers. And then you start looking maybe over the last half decade and it's like, OK, Georgia, best in the trenches, Michigan, best in the trenches, Alabama, best in the trenches. These are the teams that are continually showing up. So that planet theory is that, you know, you've got to get the guys that are bigger, faster, stronger, because those are the ones who win games, especially up front. Get those 300 plus pound dancing bears.
To quote the great Chip Kelly, who, even though he's fallen off, is still an amazing mind. Big people beat up little people.
It has been that. That is a truism in football that it will always be.
All right, we're going to do sleepers. We're going to have three guys you're going to be able to get after day one, day two. I don't know how you would define it. If we accidentally end up on a day two guy, I promise you guys, it's going to be fine. Right. We'll qualify it. Nobody's going to try to say he's going to be a round five guy.
Right.
But it's just guys who maybe are just not being talked about enough. Your first Deontay Lee is who?
We'll start with quarterback. Mine is Spencer Rattler.
Ooh.
I think that's a guy.
Oh!
That's a guy that I think, if you would have asked me 2 years ago, there's no way I would probably be saying what I'm saying about him now. But you watch like the way that he's handled pressure, adding, you know, touch throws, being a little bit more accurate, being a little bit more decisive from the pocket. He's evolved a bunch from the worst days at Oklahoma and some of the things that were rough last year at South Carolina. I think this year was just kind of like done a disservice because of how weak that offensive line was. And you can kind of see maybe a little bit of desperation popping up in his game, trying to stay away from getting hit. But if you're a team that likes to be a spread offense, wants a guy that has all the arm talent in the world, can actually go create a little bit within the pocket, create space to make, you know, make those off platform, off your typical throwing angle type of plays, I think he's a guy that maybe you can keep in the wings and develop, and he might be able to be a spot starter quality backup and then turn into, you know, maybe a guy who's about like a bridge quarterback quality player.
Any specific program that jumps out to you, you'd say, I'd love to see him under this coach?
I would say all of the teams we know to be like the typical spread team. So if I'm, if I'm Denver, I mean, their quarterback situation is what it is. I wouldn't draft him with the idea that he can start right away. But in Sean Payton's offense, you need a guy who can create within the pocket and can rip those seam throws, you know, that's willing to throw the middle of the field. And I think that Spencer Rattler is a guy who can do that. Philadelphia, I think he would be a quality backup for. He can go develop there. You know, underneath Kellen Moore, who's going to play a little bit more of that wide open football in the passing game, pure drop back game. Indianapolis, you know, with with Shane Steichen. He's another guy that I think will be like a qualifier there. So I think those types of offenses I would be really interested to see him in.
I did not anticipate Spencer Rattler talk here. Although, you know, I had a GM before last season say that he liked him more than most people. And I think a lot of it, I think we do this all the time. We discard prospects and then we give up on them.
Exactly.
And there's no way to bounce back. And so Spencer Rattler is at Oklahoma. And like everyone says, well, he's got this golden opportunity with Lincoln Riley. It's time to be, you know, the next Baker Mayfield, the next Jalen Hurts. Doesn't happen. He gets supplanted by Caleb Williams. Right. And all of a sudden we just sort of, we all move on with our lives. He made mistakes at South Carolina. That was a bad team. That was a bad program. They're losing a bunch of guys at the portal. But I do think that in a vacuum, he's maybe a little better prospect than we give him credit for narrative-wise.
Yeah,
narrative-wise.
I agree with that.
All right, my first guy is Elifacio from Washington. Mm-hmm. He's a linebacker, 6'1", 236. I watched the first of all, the testing numbers are off the charts.
Yeah.
One of the best athletes linebacker in the draft. And I read a bunch of his scouting reports. And they said, well, he's strong enough to get off blocks. The problem is some instinctual problems or whatever. I didn't see that on tape. And maybe I was looking at, there's an old scouting term, setup game, where it's like, you know, you just watch a bunch of games because you're setting up to basically make a case that a guy should be drafted. Maybe I was just watching too many of those. Maybe I didn't watch enough lowlights. But he's the type of guy, obviously the Washington defense has question marks,
right.
But it was a high-level program. Big game reps. He played a lot of football. He won every single, it's all second team or third team by basically every service that does those things last year. And I just, I when I watch him, I just don't know why he's not, I mean, maybe it's just a position he plays, but it just felt like he was all over the place on the field. And I just love the guy. And I think you bet on, I've always, and this is, by the way, this is going to be throughout the show.
Yeah.
I bet on athleticism. I literally just filter by jumping and 40 and all that stuff as a threshold. Now I feel like you just have to get past those thresholds. Not like I learned my lesson. I joke about all the time. I learned my lesson on Andre Dillard. I learned my lesson on Jason Spriggs. I learned my lesson from a defensive back standpoint on the first Melifonu,
right.
Where he was jumping through the building
and couldn't play.
He's 41 inch vert, whatever.
Right.
It's not that if you do 41, I remember Minka Fitzpatrick was a good athlete, but not an elite athlete. And I was sitting there in the dressing room, well, look at this guy. Well, guess what? Minka Fitzpatrick can ball and he's athletic enough.
Yeah.
That's what matters.
Right.
And so for me, I always, the thing I do now is I take the testing numbers, marry it with the tape. Like I'll give you a great example. There's a kid from Houston Christian named Jalix Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Incredible testing numbers, really good production, small school guy, and invited to the Senior Bowl. And I see his testing numbers.
Right.
And I go, holy crap.
Right. Yeah.
And I say, this is a guy I'm circling. And then check around on him. People say he wasn't used right. He was in the flat too much. But then I watched him last night and he had a couple, I think they played Western Kentucky, a couple other teams like that.
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't, to me, he doesn't play explosive. He doesn't look like you should look like the fastest player in the history of Houston Christian time you're on the field.
100%.
And if you test, that's great. But it's just not the same for me. And so he was on my list and then he fell off it because I actually watched him play, which, by the way, young draft Knicks, I encourage you to watch these guys play. But it's just that kind of thing where when I watch Washington, my guy just stood out every single time.
I think that's becoming more of evaluating linebackers, period, right? Like you want guys that pop athletically because the truth of the matter is like we're not in an era anymore where I think you're just going to see guys drop into the league and be a Michael linebacker, be a Will linebacker and be that productive right out the gate, right? I think the learning curve for that position is really trending in the direction of tight end, right? And this is something I was tweeting back and forth with Mina Kimes with, you know, and she was talking about this.
Who?
Mina Kimes. Doesn't ring a bell.
No.
Never heard of her.
I'll Google it.
But she was kind of talking about the free agent class of linebackers and why it's so deep with guys who are in their late 20s that can play. And I think that what we're seeing, you know, you think of Patrick Queen, you think of Jordan Brooks,
yep,
you think of those guys, came in the league, asked to do a lot right out the gate, guys who are pretty good athletes, and they struggle, and it takes some time. So I think you've got to get guys that clear those athletic benchmarks like you're talking about, and you can turn on the tape and see, like, all right, he's got the quick twitch that he needs to be able to go out and play in space. You know, he's got the closing speed, and he takes the right angles to the ball, and it looks explosive when he's taking on blocks. It looks explosive when he's making contact with the ball carrier. And then we've got to teach him NFL defense from there, because mm-hmm. the college game is so separate, I think, from what the league is asking guys on defense to do. So I think that Olufosio is a guy that I like as well. Junior Colson's another guy that I look at that I'm happy with, yeah, that I would be excited about too.
So I will say, you know, it's funny because when the thing that changed my mind on this so much was the Mike Tomlin interview on The Pivot. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you saw it, mm-hmm. where he basically says, like, I when he sees things in scouting reports, and I'm using a different example, but like, the scouting report says, okay, well, he's having instinct problems. Well, that's called coaching. And so it should be your job, right, when you say that. And obviously instincts, some of it. And again, I didn't see it on tape, but I'm just talking about, you should want guys who are strong enough, make the tackle, all that stuff. And then you teach them where they should be looking, where they should, yep, put their eyes. And like, that was the big thing. I remember years ago talking to some of the Packers, I think it was Joe Witt Jr. actually. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about some of their young players, and he was just like, you can change a young man's life by telling him where to look,
yeah,
you know, on an offense. And right, they're not taught at, you know, whatever Pac-12 school, they're not taught at whatever Big 12 school to look at this point of the backfield, not that point of the backfield.
Right.
You know, Nick Saban talking about different parts of where you should look, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Like, I just think that there's so many different coaching points that you just bet on athleticism and tape, and then you can go from there. So I completely agree with some of the linebacker takes you have. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, next guy, to the point of you're making about feel for the game and guys that just have it versus guys that don't. Kalen Bullock, safety from USC. Mm. That's another guy I watch. You can watch him in the middle of the field break on the ball, and you can see, like, all right, that guy's got ball tracking skills that not a lot of guys have coming out of college, especially a guy that's not coming in having played 5-6 years, right? Like, so you're going to get a guy who's on the right side of the age curve. I think he'll be 21 at the point, just turning 21 at the point of the draft. So you've got a guy that's not peaking already athletically. He's got the size. He's a tall dude, you know, ran fast enough to where you're starting to hear rumors in Indianapolis last week that maybe teams will try him out at corner, right? Or teams might have a little bit of interest bringing him closer to the line of scrimmage, right? Because he does have the speed, because he has the length, because he has the size. But you turn on the tape, you're talking about a guy who can plant his foot, get to the ball from the middle of the field out to the numbers. He's one of those types of guys. Obviously forced a bunch of turnovers 2 seasons ago. Probably the only positive that USC had defensively last year, right? A guy who was consistent week in and week out. That's somebody, if you're the Packers, let's say you miss out on like a Cooper DeJean, or you strike out on this deep safety free agent class, and you're looking round 3, round 4 for a guy that you can maybe develop to play in a Jeff Hafley scheme, which is going to be a lot of single high stuff. Mm. Bullock is the type of guy I think that would fit that. Same with Mike McDonald in Baltimore, right?
Yeah.
You want a guy who can really range and go play in coverage comfortably. Bullock's a guy I think who meets that. And I think that he's got the willingness to be physical that I think will turn into more production when you look at his tackling issues once the guy actually kind of gets his grown man NFL body.
Okay, so a couple things. I had a really smart person tell me a couple years ago about football is surprisingly efficient. Like, this isn't like baseball in 2000 where, right, Billy Beane could just come in and say on base percentage and then we're there. But they said the one place people don't look at enough, and this is NFL or college, is scouting tire fires.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, like the receiver who has the quarterback,
right,
where you have stuff like that,
right,
and you're saying, okay, we're gonna bet on this guy because he just wasn't put in that situation, we're gonna trust our eyes and our evals,
right?
I don't know a better example of a tire fire than the USC defense last year. If you were a bright spot on the USC defense last year, you were on my board.
Yep. I mean, and that's what it was. It's funny talking in that way, right? Like, I'm a high school football coach, so I'm always thinking of high school and college and the way you look at guys, and you'll see, all right, there's a really good football player playing next to a bunch of guys who are going to be adjusters for an insurance company,
in
5-6 years, and I think that there's a good deal of that when you're watching Bullock, of like, all right, he's playing in a defensive backfield where maybe 4 of his 5 teammates back here won't be doing anything with football, or maybe they're UFL players. And you've got a guy who's a clear pro that understands the game really well, and you can see him kind of separating himself from his peers. And I think that that's why he's been so productive, and I think that's why he'll be a successful pro.
Bunch of law students.
Yeah, he's playing with a bunch of law students. A bunch of guys that are going to be sticking around USC for a while, man.
Prioritizing education. Still there. Still on campus. Still on campus listening to this show. More with Deontay after this.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net, Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP, Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700, Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
All right, so I don't want, this might be cheating. I'm going to name a bunch of guys, so don't get mad at me.
No, go ahead.
Because, no, I'm talking to the listener.
Got you.
You're not going to get mad at me. You're my friend. I really do want to talk about Ricky Pearsall.
I love that.
And I know he's shooting up to where he's no longer a sleeper. And right. I think the biggest problem with a lot of stuff, he goes, hey, sleeper, hidden gem. Then it's like, well, this guy, it was funny. I actually talked to someone last night when I was doing some work on these guys who were saying they're actually upset how well Ricky Pearsall has been doing during this process because he's not going to be the hidden gem.
Right.
But he saved his coach's job, I think, a couple of times with cashing in huge fourth downs. Without him, I think Billy Napier would have been fired last year. Again, you want to talk about tire fires. He was the only guy who seemed like he cared for a lot of plays last year. Catching passes from Graham Ertz. Always the reliable guy in big spots. In fact, the only reliable guy in big spots. The route running, terrific. Making plays downfield or behind the line of scrimmage. I just think that, I hate, oftentimes we always say, and this is one of my least favorite draft tropes, is we always go, all right, you draft this center 40th overall, you can pencil him in for 10 years in the league. Well, if you could pencil him in for 10 years in the league,
he wouldn't be in the second round, right?
45th right. in the draft, okay? And also nobody, you can't pencil anybody in for 10 years, right. okay? This is a different league. But I just feel like he's going to be a day two guy who is going to be reliable day one, and he's going to play a bunch of years in the league. And there aren't that many guys that I look at where I'm betting I'm just going to see this guy making plays 7 years from now. Ricky Pearsall is one of those for me.
And I think that another thing with Pearsall is in watching him, there's something to be said for a guy who gets significantly better year over year. Right.
Absolutely.
If you go and you're looking at Anthony Richardson tape from a couple seasons ago, you're watching Pearsall and it's like, all right, I can tell the athleticism's there. He's clearly got a good catch radius, but he doesn't yet understand the nuances of playing the position, right? Being in the right spots, making himself available for the quarterback, knowing how to get open consistently. And then you turn on last year's tape and you see all those things, So just in an offseason's time, you see the amount of detail that goes into his game, you know, being able to use different releases, being able to work the top of the route a little bit better. And then you add, you layer that on top of what he already brought to the table, which is more than adequate NFL speed, a guy who can jump out the gym, right? He's going to go win at the highest point, you know, in contested catch situations, somebody you can move around inside and out. Now you're looking at a guy, to your point, that's probably, that's a sleeper in the sense of you're never going to hear him in the conversation with the top five, six, seven wide receivers. But once you get past that tier of guys, you're looking at him, you're looking at guys like Malachi Corley, just like who are the wide receivers who are always open? And if they're not open, they're always making a play on the ball. He fits that billing. And if I'm a team like maybe the Giants and maybe we have to address another need early in the draft, if we can go take a swing again early in the second round, that's the kind of guy I want to go get to pair with the rest of the receiving core.
So I completely agree. I want to shout out because I cheated and said Ricky Pearsall when we're doing mid-round sleepers here. The other guy like that is Peyton Wilson.
Yes.
Where Peyton Wilson is probably not going to go in the first round, but he might be the first linebacker off the board because it's just the way that developed.
Yep.
And I am in love with Peyton Wilson, the player. You can't call him a sleeper because he might be the first linebacker off the board, but he's going to be a day two
guy. And you're definitely not a sleeper after you run that 40. You're not a sleeper 100%. Anymore once you put that
40. He is the honorary. So both Pearsall and Peyton Wilson are my honorary former sleepers. Congratulations to graduating from sleeperdom.
Exactly. I don't know if you watch like Next Level Chef, but they're out of the basement. You know, those guys.
They're out of the basement. One other guy I want to who got on the radar is the kid from Louisville, Isaac Grendo. Is that how you pronounce the last name? And again, another testing guy. He's big. He's physical. Production was there. Yep. 810 yards last year, 11 touchdowns. Got better every single year, stats-wise, I mean, basically by every metric. And he's that kind of athlete. Yep. Again, part of this is you're a sleeper because of the positional value. Exactly. Just no one talks about running backs unless they're going to go in the first round. But again, he's another guy to me, not necessarily a sleeper, but deserves mention in this conversation where I'm just talking about amazing athletes I really, really like.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Two other guys, I'll go to DB for me, that I'm really interested in.
Please.
Andrew Phillips from Kentucky, Josh Newton, TCU, tweeted about Josh Newton last week. You know, you want to talk about guys that are going to be baseline athletes, right? They're not low 4.3 guys. They're not going to be 6'2 with 34-inch arms. But these are guys that can play in the slot or outside. I think for the teams that are trying to play nickel to everything and you need that slot defender that's going to be in that 6-foot range, 200-plus pounds or around that range and can run a 4 or 5 and will stick their nose in there and being competitive with setting edges and making tackles out in space, those are two guys that I really like. And I think that Josh Newton is somebody who was maybe a little bit higher on people's radar as a DB a couple of years ago when TCU was making their deep playoff run. I think that now, you know, you're not playing with as many talented guys. You're maybe getting targeted a little bit more. People start nitpicking your game. I don't know if he's a number one type of DB that people might have thought he was 2 years ago, but you still watch him and he's consistent. He's competitive at the catch point. He's really good with press, so you can drop him inside and he can play physically. And, you know, if you need a cornerback too, that's another guy that can fit the billing. So when you think about like the Buffaloes and teams like that, San Francisco's, the guys who want to play nickel no matter what kind of offensive personnel is on the field, I think Andrew Phillips and Josh Newton are the type of guys that fit that.
Hey, when you're, I know this is a big question, but when like, the college game is getting closer to the NFL game every single year.
Yeah.
But I'm really bad at evaluating cornerbacks. I'll give you a great example. And maybe this is because of he had a big special teams error in September and he just got in my personal doghouse, but like Tyreek Stevenson in Miami. Some of this was scheme stuff.
Right.
Some of it was safety stuff. Some of it was just that the offense, his last year was so bad that they were just, the defense was on the field all the time and they were just getting failed, which again is part of it. But you're looking, when you're evaluating college CBs for potential, you're looking at what, Deontay?
Change of direction skills. I want to see how you play at the line of scrimmage, right? Are you willing to play at the line of scrimmage? Are you smooth with your hips? How do you play at the top of the route? Like, I really get into, like, coaching brain when it comes to DB, right? I'm going to look at, you know, how are you handling different releases? Are you confident with your hands? Are you confident with your feet? Or are you always in recovery mode right off the line of scrimmage? At the top of the route, you know, are you willing to be physical? You see some DBs that are scared, you know, either too grabby because they feel like they can't change direction. I think we saw a little bit of that maybe with, like, Kelee Ringo right? Who's like a really good linear athlete. When you talk about playing at the top of the route, you start talking about different releases. Maybe you see some different things you can nitpick. So I'm looking at how you deal with that. Can you be physical? Can you maintain your balance through contact? And then how are you competing at the catch point? Not that everybody has to be Terrion Arnold, you know, getting 5, 6, 7 interceptions in a year to be considered a good DB. I just want guys that are going to knock wide receivers' hands away, that are consistently trying to make plays at the ball. Those are the guys I'm really excited. I get really excited about. So that's why Josh Newton rates well for me. Andrew Phillips rates well for me. Kyrie Jackson, who's maybe not a mid-round guy. I might see him more as like a round two type of guy. That's somebody else I really get excited about because of how competitive he is and how he plays at the line of scrimmage. And then everything else, you know, like that's the position that's going to come to Indy and do all the drills, right? You want to see who are those peak top level athletes in terms of top end speed. So if, once you have that, I'll really kind of key into who you are as a player. And if you don't, then obviously that puts more on your plate in terms of having to be refined technically.
Fascinating. All right. I want to shout out a couple people here. There's a ton of athletic safeties in this draft, a ton. And I'm not putting any of them on my list. Jalen Simpson from Auburn, a little bit lighter than the other guys, but that's a guy. It was funny because I always joke about this. Everybody who's off my board is when the scouting report says you have to, your coach better have a plan to use this guy. Is that it's all they can never figure it out. Yeah. Every time I like DJ and Bucky, they like they'll always be like, hey, you know, this guy's good, but you gotta have a plan for him. Every time I hear that, I'm just like, I don't trust NFL coaches enough, frankly, right?
Well, and the timeline's not long enough. Nobody has time to figure it out or make a plan for a guy. Can you play or can you not play?
And so Jalen Simpson. I saw that a couple of times when reading about him and watching him. And he's extremely athletic. Cole Bishop from Utah.
Yeah.
Heavier. Love another Bishop. Another great athlete. Ryan Watts from Texas and Tyler Owens from Texas Tech.
Love those Ryan are the Watts. Four.
Those are the four safeties who really stood out to me. Again, not necessarily sleepers. I just wanted to name check some when I was going through the athleticism this morning.
Wake Forest's Malik Mustafa is another guy that I'm interested in at that position. That dude plays
interesting
with the level of reckless abandon that you really like to see out of safeties that, you know, playing those quarter shells, two deep shells, or guys that got to come out the roof with bad intentions and get to the line of scrimmage and go make tackles. I like watching that guy play. That's another guy that I'm really interested in as well. Probably not like a top end athlete, but a guy who has a kind of play style that you really want to see for a guy who's going to be around the box, you know, matching up with tight ends and having to help you stop the run.
All right. My last guy is another Kentucky guy. How do we have Kentucky guys all over the place? It's Trevin Wallace. He's a linebacker. Yep. Another guy who the testing is moving him up boards, and he was supposed to be a day three guy. He might sneak into day two at this point. A linebacker, I think he's 241 pounds. He's fast. Again, I don't see the things the scouting reports see. I see a guy who knows where the ball is all the time. He has 3 interceptions over 2 years, I think 5.5 sacks last year, was able to snuff out runs really quickly. This is a guy who just, I feel like in 3 years, we're going to be talking about a guy who just is a nightmare for defenses to have to game plan against. He had 80 tackles. And I just, when the athleticism to me matches up and you're a linebacker in the middle of the field, good things happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the game, right? Like, you look at the teams that are winning, you know, year in and year out now, especially playing good defense, you get guys who play well in the middle of the field. It's about range. I think that sometimes, and this is another reason that makes this position hard to scout at times, is I think that people have a hard time determining what instincts are versus a guy who just goes, right? Like, you look at like Jeremiah Trotter Jr. I think that's a really good athlete, but you watch him, and I think that some of the things that might be credited to instincts or feel for the game are really just him triggering or them having him called on blitzes. There are a lot of linebackers
What their coach to do
who are blitzing, you know, who are just taking a gap. And not that that's not valuable, but you think about the NFL game and how much outside zone you see, right? How much the ball's being sprayed out to the sideline. You don't get a lot of opportunities to just dig your heels into the turf and just go forward, right? Like, you need guys who can move, who can change directions, who understand angles, who understand tendencies of offenses. That's what I'm looking for out of this linebacker class. So I can definitely see the potential in a guy like that.
I promise you, if a guy's job is just to pin his ears back and get after the quarterback, he's going to look like he's playing really fast on the tape. But guess what? Not everybody is coached to do that.
Exactly.
So Anyway, anybody else on your list we need to shout out?
So last few guys on my list, number one, and you'll get a kick out of this because I do think that there is some truth to you kind of have to have a plan for this guy, is Roger Rosengarten, the right tackle from the University of Washington. And I say
Kelly texted me about him last night.
Yeah, I say you need to have a plan for him in the sense that he's light. The dude is really, really light. He doesn't play with a lot of power. He's very much a finesse pass protector type of offensive tackle. So he's not going to step in and just be moving guys off the line of scrimmage in your outside zone scheme. He's not going to be able to pull on counter and go kill a defensive end or get up to a linebacker, but he can handle himself well in pass protection. He's probably not ready to start right now, but I think you give him some time, put 20 pounds on him, you know, let him learn the NFL run game. That's a guy I think that can be a really good swing tackle for a team because he's played on the left and right side. And then the last three guys I'm thinking of are all tight ends that don't have crazy reception numbers that you don't see split out playing at the X like a Jaheim Bell, Jatavion Sanders, Brock Bowers, right? These are all Big Ten guys, which is just funny in that own right, thinking about how they use tight ends versus the rest of the country. That's Kate Stover from Ohio State, which I think people have been aware of for years now, right? You have Theo Johnson at Penn State and Tip Raymond at Illinois. All three guys will step into the league as competitive blocking types. They fit the size profile you want. And I think they're all underrated athletes. And they're athletes in ways that I think don't show up in their reception numbers because they're not playing in offenses that are looking to feature tight ends in the passing game. And I think for me, if I'm not going to get that top, you know, 10th percent, top 90th percentile tight end guy like a Brock Bowers, like a JT Sanders, like a Jaheim Bell, I want to get guys like Stover, Johnson, and Raymond that know how to block and can go contribute in the game that way. And then they can learn how to get the proper feel for playing tight end as a receiver as they kind of progress in the league. So that would be, you know, my kind of round three to round five group of tight ends that I think could turn into something in the league.
He's at Deontay Lee FB on Twitter. More insights on the way. Thanks, buddy.
No, man. Thank you for having me.